What is up and welcome back to 24 minutes of the Oscars, the podcast that takes a look at the 2024 Oscars 24 minutes at a time. I'm Ethan Simme.
And I'm Ben Lawhorn. This week on the pod, we are facing all of our moral qualms and becoming Death, the Destroyer of Worlds, as we discuss our second Best Picture nominee of the season, Oppenheimer.
The story of American scientist J. Robert Oppenheimer and his role in the development of the atomic bomb. We are on Best Picture number two. We are still guessing Best Picture nominees. I feel pretty safe with Oppenheimer.
We'll see. Who knows?
We'll see how it shakes. We covered Barbie last week, had a wonderful guest. Bobby was super cool. We're back this week talking Oppenheimer. We have another wonderful guest joining us. I'm so excited to have Sophie Hulsinger on the pod to talk about the best movie of 2023. Sophie, how's it going? Welcome to the show.
Like Opp and Mommy to you. Just kidding. Hi, guys. It's so good to be back. Talking about my favorite movie of the year, the decade, maybe. I love this movie. Excited to chat.
I'm excited. I'm very, very excited.
Set the tone right there. Favorite movie of the decade, maybe. Jesus, I like it.
So I want to quickly sidebar before we talk about Oppenheimer, because all three of us have just started a new podcast. And by the time that this episode comes out, the first episode of that podcast will be a mere 3 days away. Talking about the Movie Draft podcast, of course. I'm very excited. I know you guys are very excited. A little behind the scenes, we actually just recorded our first episode of the Movie Draft podcast real close before we recorded this episode. I just wanted to get a pulse check. How do you guys feel how that recording went? You guys think you're going to win the first draft of that pod ever and hype it up so that people can listen?
I think it's going to be awesome. I had a lot of fun with whatever place I was in. My first pick, I did take a movie that I'd seen multiple times, so I was super happy about that.
I'm super stoked about
the draft and how it turned out. And I'm excited to hear what people think about it.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun. I think I got a good mix of things that might appeal to the voters, but also still was very me. So I feel good. Mm-hmm. I'm excited.
Sound of Freedom was a weird choice, Sophie. But, you know, we got to support you. So whatever you want to do is fine.
Whatever you watch in your free time is your personal
qualm. Got to be true to yourself.
I'm really excited for that first episode of the movie draft podcast. It is 2023 movies that we are drafting. So Oppenheimer eligible in the draft. Will it get drafted? God only hopes so, because if it doesn't, I don't think any of us should be hosting movie podcasts, quite honestly. Go check that out. Comes out on January 16th. But more importantly, we're talking about Oppenheimer here. In depth, Sophie, we like to ask every single guest when we do these Oscars episodes. We did them all season last year. We did 10 Best Picture nominees. We're doing the same this year. What do the Oscars mean to you? What's your relationship with the Academy Awards? Do you watch them? Do you enjoy them? What do they mean in your life?
Yeah. Well, my mom was pretty clued into all kinds of stuff, so I remember caring more about like the host, like the comic aspects, maybe like the musical performances, which is funny because that's probably like my least favorite aspect of the Academy Awards at this point. But a very distinct memory of like Neil Patrick Harris's musical opening monologue from like 20. I really started watching the Oscars, and I would throw Oscar parties for my friends. Everyone was required to wear full-length gowns, red carpet, fill out a ballot, the whole shebang.
Wow.
I care deeply about the Oscars, though. I know they're made up, and they very often disappoint me. There's a lot of Oscar parties in the city, but this year I'm watching on my couch, and yeah.
Yeah. Do you live in – what city is that you live in again? I can't remember.
Yeah, I never talk about it ever.
Same place. Same place the Ninja Turtles live, right?
Home of the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah. The Ninja Turtles live below my apartment. Oh, actually.
Yeah.
How did you feel last year when Babylon lost original score?
Oh, that was The Loss of the Night for sure.
Oh, okay, good. Wow, nice. Yeah. I have an ally on the pod, Ben.
Hey, it's like one of the two I missed, so I was also sad that it didn't get it, but you know, it is what it is.
Yes. We are excited for the Oscars this year as well. And you mentioned that they're totally made up, and you know, they are. And I think it's worth noting that they are just a completely make-believe, pretty much a dumpster fire that we just pour like 13 weeks of our lives unapologetically like into.
Yeah.
And try to do all this predicting and thinking and critiquing. And it boils down to things like All Quiet on the Western Front winning Best Original Score. So, you know, it's best of both worlds, I guess. You get some, you give some. And I'm interested to see how Oppenheimer is going to do this year at the Academy Awards. I think based on our slate of 10 movies that we're talking about, Oppenheimer is probably the biggest and the most notable and the one that has the most amount of potential to hold the most nominations, possibly walk home with the most amount of wins, and really set a standard for the new wave of the Academy Awards and the Oscars. So if you mentioned this is your favorite movie of the year of 2023, one of your favorite movies of the decade, do you want to elaborate on that at all before we start kind of breaking down the Oscars when it comes to Oppenheimer?
Yeah, of course. Wow, okay. So, entering the Barbenheimer experience, I really thought that Barbie was going to be my movie. Mm-hmm. I'm not a huge Nolan head. I love the work of Nolan, but he's not like one of my favorites. But I love history. I love character studies. And I think Oppenheimer just feels like a collision of those two things on the largest scale possible. I'm hesitant to say I love biopics because they're often done very poorly, but I think Oppenheimer is like right up there with The Social Network for me as like the best biopic ever made, even though the bar isn't that high. Yeah, I just think it's a perfect movie. I think it's a masterpiece, and I think it was like fun for me because it was so out of left field. Like, I just did not think that I was going to be obsessed with Nolan's atomic bomb film, and I am, and it's kind of my whole personality. So, that's fun, but yeah, I could talk for hours about it. So I'm happy to be here doing that.
At least you've adopted the Oppenheimer personality, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like you're leaning into it, and that's a good thing.
Thanks. Thank you.
Yeah. Be true to yourself. Yeah. I think part of what makes it work is it's not the biopic in the sense of like going through the entire lifespan for the most part. Like, we kind of, it takes, I feel like, the approach almost like Steve Jobs did, where it's like, let's just take a couple big moments in this person's life and focus on that. Obviously, like, building the bomb was a major focus of this movie, as it should have been, but we get a little bit beforehand, and then like you know, when he's a much older person at the end. But I think that's what worked about it. I told you guys, but, you know, listeners will hear for the first time, that I rewatched it and I enjoyed it more the second time. Kind of went up a star for me. And I did say, though, in my first Letterboxd review that, like, it does deserve every nomination that it could possibly get. It just, it wasn't for me the first time. You know, so I want to put that out there. I wasn't just like completely shitting on the movie. Like, it's a very well-made movie, and I recognize that from the beginning. And I'm curious to see exactly how many nominations it'll walk away with.
There are so many things that I want to say. There's so many thoughts. I really am interested. So at time of recording, and I'm sure when this episode drops as well, I'm sure this conversation will not have fallen off by then. I am interested in the biopic aspect of Oppenheimer. I, much like you, Sophie, I think it's one of the best movies of the decade. I think it's a masterpiece. It's my favorite movie of the year. I think it's got it all. I think it's the entire package of what you're looking for in a truly masterful film. And just because this is like front of my mind, we just recorded the pod where we talk about this a little bit, and it is another potential Best Picture nominee that is going to be in this conversation that we might end up covering here on the show. We'll see how it shakes. I'm curious if this is I think it's just interesting to compare to Maestro in terms of like a biopic, because they're both biopics. They're both about historically important figures of their times, for sure. But Maestro is being labeled as like a very Oscar bait type movie where it's like acting and it's a movie. And like, we're seeing lots of these things where it's like, oh, it wants Oscars. I'm just curious, playing devil's advocate here, of course. What about Oppenheimer doesn't like check those boxes? Because if we think it's going to go for double digit nominations, mm-hmm. like, is that not like Oscar baity, quote unquote? You know what I'm like getting at here? It's like, where's the differentiating line for Oppenheimer being like a masterful movement and then Maestro falling off? And obviously I'm not comparing these movies. I think they're vastly different films, but it just is intriguing to me to think about.
To me, again, like having not seen Maestro, it just almost feels like Nolan is indifferent about how it's received in the Oscars. You know, it's just kind of mm-hmm. like, you know, it's the person that you're super attracted to, but they're just like kind of playing hard to get, like, oh, whatever, you know, I'm not a big thing. Whereas Bradley
makes
Cooper
you want
is,
it more, huh?
He's horny for this Oscar, you know, he is just like ready to go. He's like anything, you know, with a pulse. Yeah. He's like, yep, I'll take it. He's just like, I don't know. So it comes across, I think, as a little bit more of an Oscar bait. Like, okay, I think a lot of us thought he had at least some wins in the bag with A Star Is Born, and, you know, it kind of fell through for the most part. And so this, I think, felt like a calculated follow-up. It's like, all right, cool. You guys want a biopic then? Like, obviously my fourth remake of A Star Is Born telling didn't work. So let me give you guys a biopic because you guys love a biopic. It just feels very calculated. It makes me think about him when he was like on the Actors Studio thing as a student, you know, it's this guy has always loved movies, which is great, but I think he's always just been very hungry and maybe to the point of desperation for like the recognition and that kind of a thing. So I think for me, I think it's just how I interpret both of them feeling about the Oscars. One person feels somewhat indifferent and another person couldn't care more about anything else.
I think that's
interesting. I completely agree. I think, Ben, you said it well. I just think Bradley Cooper wants it. And like, the only thing that I can think about is like, we know he wants it, not a bad thing at all. It's just obvious in his, which is like an amazing thing. I just think Nolan is like, he's just the guy. Cell phone, like, he just does not give a shit what people think about like his movie. He's just happy to be making it.
Which I wonder too, like, if that has come, like, maybe Nolan was Cooper at some point, because I think a lot of us that were into it were surprised at the time with like Dark Knight not getting anything in 2008, and so Nolan now has like lived through this thing of like, okay, you guys like have recognized me a little. You literally changed the amount of Best Picture nominees because of my movie. So I kind of already won. You know what I mean? It's like, what's an actual Oscar going to do? Like, I changed the format to some extent, you know? Yeah. So it's like, I don't know. Obviously, like, who doesn't want an Oscar and stuff? But maybe at one point he was Bradley Cooper and he was super hungry for it. And now he's just like come to terms with it. So maybe we'll be talking about Bradley Cooper's Oppenheimer, you know what I mean, in like 15 years. So who knows?
Sure. I agree with both of you. I agree. I wasn't saying that I disagree necessarily. I just think it's an interesting juxtaposition to put, you know, really the two biopics that we're going to end up getting in the Best Picture race kind of against each other and seeing similarities and differences. I do think Bradley Cooper's real energy to want that award is so palpable, to the point of a turnoff for a lot of people. And you're right, like, Christopher Nolan doesn't have a cell phone. Like, tonight, the night that we were recording is the New York Film Critics circle, and they're doing their awards, and word on the street is that he got up and just talked about him riding his Peloton because when he accepted his award, because guy doesn't have a cell phone, he's not very online, so he's just chatting about what he knows and what he likes, which is like really cool. So I just think it's interesting. But back to Oppenheimer, I'm gonna run through a short list of what we think Oppenheimer has the potential to be nominated for, and I want to briefly go through with you guys do we think it's going to get all of these? Do we think, which ones do we think it's going to win? How do we think it's going to shake? We talked to Clayton a couple of weeks ago, and he seems pretty adamant that Oppenheimer is going to do quite well in the nominations. Mm-hmm. And if it does kind of catch the steam below the line, that it'll keep that steam above the line. So I'm really interested, and maybe we can dissect that for a few minutes. So, of course, Best Picture. That's why we're covering it here on the show. Best Director, Christopher Nolan. Best Actor, Cillian Murphy. Best Supporting Actress, Emily Blunt. Best Supporting Actor, Robert Downey Jr. Best Adapted Screenplay on the book American Prometheus. Best Production Design. Best Cinematography. Best Costume Design. Best Film Editing. Best Makeup and Hairstyling. Best Sound. Best Original Score. It cannot be nominated for Best VFX because it did not make the shortlist, which I think is another interesting wrinkle into the conversation that we actually just had right now of, like, the Academy saw Christopher Nolan kind of shit on VFX, and they're like, you know what? Not for us. So that type of energy is very real and palpable. That's 13, I believe, if I counted correctly, categories that it could be nominated for. Now, the record, of course, would be 14, All About Eve. I know La La Land's in that group. Very select few. Sophie, do you think Oppie is going to get nominated for all of these categories? What's your take on how Oppenheimer might do?
Yeah, so I think, like, over the past few years, movies that have gotten, like, over 13 nominations or close to it have been, like, Mank and The Irishman, and they went home with absolutely nothing. And I don't think Oppenheimer is going to be like that at all. I feel very confident that it's going to walk away with a lot of major awards. Honestly, I think the acting categories is where I think it may struggle. But I mean, to me, I don't know if I'm getting ahead here, but, like, I think it's going to win Best Picture. I just think it's powerful, and I don't know. I don't think anything else has really, like you guys said, like, this is just the movie of the year. It's what, like, people are going to think of when they think of 2023. And I want to believe that the Academy will go with it. I never have faith in them, really, but yeah. I mean, I would like to believe that it's the winner.
Do you think, because this is a question we asked Clayton, and I'm sure we're going to be talking about it every single episode as we move on here. Do you think Oppenheimer takes both Best Picture and Best Director? Or do you think there's a split in the cards for a Best Picture Oppie and a Best Director Scorsese? How do you think the Academy might roll on that? I'm nervous. That's why I asked.
I'm nervous. Yeah, I'm nervous. I don't know. I mean, I think Nolan's going to take it. That's not what I would prefer, actually. I think Scorsese, yeah, I mean, I don't know. They're both just like, what are you going to say? They're the two best, like, directors working right now, in my opinion. Yeah. So I don't know. It would be cool if he walked away with both.
What do you think, Ben?
I mean, I don't know that they split. I think it'd be a great way to acknowledge both directors if they did split. You know, it's like, yeah, Oppenheimer is the movie of the year, but Marty, like, we don't know literally how many more you have in you. We don't just want to recognize you for a remake, you know, for The Departed. Like, let's, like, get you something more current. But I don't know that I see it getting split. I do agree with Sophie, though, where it's, I think the acting is the spot, and maybe specifically Emily Blunt. Like, on the rewatch, I was surprised how much impact RDJ had on the storyline throughout, you know, like, because he does show up quite a bit. So I think he's pretty much a lock, and Cillian Murphy feels like the lock for sure. Emily Blunt, like, it's great, and it's like, she does a good job, and we've joked about it before, but it is, and for me, it's the Mark Ruffalo spotlight, you know what I mean? Like, she has an amazing scene. She has, like, a fucking, you know, tear down the walls, like, so good scene, but a lot of the rest of the time, she's not given a ton to do. So it's like, do you recognize this performance for that one really great scene? I just feel like, I don't know, there's so many good supporting actress nominees out there. I don't know, who knows if she's going to make it or not. Mm-hmm. If I had to pick something, it would be that I think would lose, and maybe something like makeup and hairstyling. I don't know. But that's just because it's going up against some big hitters, you know?
Yeah. I think that is an interesting thing, best supporting actress. We're going to break down best actor here after we talk about the movie a little bit more and what that race in particular might look like. Best supporting actress for Emily Blunt, like, I think she's obviously very critical and crucial to, like, the final half an hour of that film. I think you don't get that energetic upturn to close out the movie without her kind of, you know, testimony that she gives there at the end. It obviously is very important. She does have some very key moments in which she kind of sparks this more like moral investigation that Oppenheimer is able to embark on, particularly in the ending. So I do think it's important to recognize that. But you mentioned the other nominees. I think Divine Joy Randolph is probably her stiffest competition that she's got going on right now for the holdovers. Ben, you and I were talking offline earlier today about the holdovers and what this might pull at the Oscars. I know we're talking about it in a few weeks on this podcast. I'm excited for it, and I'm interested to see what our guest has to say and what our thoughts are. Mm-hmm. But to me, I wonder, and I didn't see the pod going this way. I didn't see me playing devil's advocate for Oppie, but I think it's fun. I think it's interesting because it is like a movie, right? I've seen it 7 times. Sophie, I think you've seen it 6 times, 7 times. Like,
I've seen it multiple times.
I don't. Oh, yeah. I'm so proud of you, Ben.
Thank you.
I'm so proud of you. You're happy. I'm happy. I love this movie, but I think it's just really interesting to think about in terms of more recently, like a Dune that gets nominated for a lot of things and picks up pretty much only below the line and just goose eggs above the line. Of course, Sophie, you mentioned like The Irishman, you mentioned Mank, like all of these things. Those two movies, I will say, in common, Netflix pushing those movies. Circling back to my Maestro conversation, yikes, that makes me nervous. But Oppenheimer, you've got a director who kind of doesn't give a shit, which is pretty cool. You've got Killian, who also is just like, yeah, I made a movie, and it was cool, and it was, like, different. And, like, that's his, like, takeaway from Oppenheimer, and you're just like, my guy, like, you're the fucking superstar of the movie world right now. Like, do you not understand? So that is really attractive. That is really incentivizing for people to, like, vote for, especially when we talk about, like, voting bodies, especially the acting body. But I think it's got a good shot to win a lot of things below and above the line. My biggest question marks, I think, come from supporting actress, supporting actor, and production design. I think you got a really tight year for production design. I know we'll talk about Poor Things next week. We talked about Barbie last week. And then supporting actor, Sophie, you're on the Charles Melton train, huh?
I am. And I also, like, I think RDJ is great in this movie. And I agree with him when he says it's the best movie that he's ever been in. But I don't know. I like a lot of performances in Oppenheimer, and it's not like even in my top five, I think.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. But I mean, I still think he's getting nominated and everything. Personally, yeah. I don't see what everyone else sees, I think.
You don't think the way that he says brother deserves an Oscar nomination?
Maybe not. Because
every time I watch it, I'm just like, oh, that was a choice. That's cool. you go, guy. I just think it's funny.
I think it's really make up Oscar for Iron Man 2. That's all they're doing here. It's like, listen, man, you held it. Like,
give it where it's due.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Big Infinity War vibes. They're just like, dude, 100%. We missed. Mm-hmm. We got to comp you. Yeah, supporting
you
actor.
Now.
Where are you at, Ben?
That's what they'll say when they hand it to him. It's like, you can rest now. Yeah. I mean,
I kind of want him to win so we could just see that happen, honestly.
Right? I think it'd be pretty awesome. Supporting actor, I mean, I think, like I said, like, that's the performance that changed the most, in my opinion, on this rewatch. It was like, oh, yeah, RDJ really does a good job here. But I do think for me, it's probably wrong, but Gosling with Ken, I think, is for me is my front runner. And I'd be curious to see what the breakdown is on screen time between the two of them, like compared to their movies, you know, the percentage wise, because when you are a 3-hour movie, there's plenty of time to have some screen time on there. But yeah, I don't know. I think he deserves to be nominated at the very least.
I want to ask one more devil's advocate question. We've had this movie for quite a long time. It was released on July 21st of 2023. That's almost 6 months ago. No. Of course, the strikes were going on, and that was a big part of kind of the novel around these summer blockbuster movies. With 13, potentially 14 double-digit nominations, is there a world in which the steam cools off in the next 3 months? Because this train has been riding full steam ahead for almost 6 months, and the conversation has not died. People are buying up every single 4K physical copy. They are selling out. Best Buy is selling out. Everywhere is selling out. People want to keep talking about Oppenheimer. People want to keep watching Oppenheimer. They like these conversations around Robert Downey Jr., around Emily Blunt, around the score, and all of these other things. Is there a world in which that just kind of falls off and we find interest in something else 3 weeks before voting happens?
I think anything is possible. I mean, we've seen like movies like Coda just like come out of nowhere. I think there's a lot of movies that like not everyone has gotten a chance to see yet, like The Zone of Interest. I don't know. There's like, there was such a moment for May December when it came out, like people were starting to put that on their list. So I don't know. I truly believe that Oppenheimer like encapsulates the year that we had with like Barbenheimer and everything. And yes, it is the movie that's like selling out and everything, like you said, but I don't know. The Academy is so unpredictable. And I never like I've said a million times, I never really have faith in them. And so I'm like, something could pop up out of nowhere. And that's just the reality. So I don't know. I mean, I hope not, but I think like Oppenheimer is a movie that like has stayed very consistent. Whereas like in previous years, I think there's been a lot more like bumps for movies throughout the year. So I don't know. I really don't. It's tough.
I saw some Oppie 4Ks in the wild the other day. At Barnes & Noble for $50.
Oh my God.
The prices for the movies are insane. I was like, oh, it's like, it was weird. I was like half tempted. I was like, I feel like I should just like get one since it's like impossible to get. Like, I don't need it, but it's just like, these are so hard to find.
I feel like you're talking about like catching Pokemon like in the wild. You're like, oh my God. Yeah. Stumbled like, across one. You gotta whip out the Pokeball.
I gotta do it. So, I don't know. I mean, all the points everyone said is valid. Everything Everywhere came out in April. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's like, it's possible that it could kind of be on a downhill slope. I also just think I feel like this group is going to campaign. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like they think they kind of know that they're the front runner. So I think that kind of goes into a lot of this as well, as who campaigns well, who does all this. It's like, you know, Guillermo del Toro, everyone loves being around him and stuff like that. And I think that shows in some of his wins. I think this is a big solid group that for the most part, I think will get their face out there.
Yeah. Oppenheimer is kind of a stalwart so far in all of the precursor award nominations. Of course we have SAG coming up here in a couple of weeks. We'll see kind of how those shake out, and everything like that. I want us to firmly and cementally, place our wins for Oppenheimer right now before we talk about the movie. Because I want it to be written in stone. Yeah. So when we all fuck up or when we all get it right, we can come back and celebrate or just get blackout drunk together. We'll see which one happens. Who wants to go first? Does anybody want to go first?
What are we picking? Like what we think is going to win for sure?
Yeah. I want you to pick Oppenheimer wins.
Okay.
For the 2024 Academy.
Sophie, do you want to go first as our guest?
Sure. I'll go first. Okay. I think best picture, best director, best actor, best adapted screenplay. Is that four? I'm trying to count. cinematography, editing, mm-hmm. sound, score.
Yeah, that's 8. You feel good with 8?
I feel good
8
about
wins.
That.
That's pretty good. That's like yeah. that's very substantial, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good though.
How many wins did Everything Everywhere get last year? Do you remember at the top of your head? I think it was like 9. So I think we're right there.
Okay.
Yeah, something like that. Let's see.
Funnily enough, those are exactly what I was going to pick for my 8 wins.
7
I think
Oscars.
Oh, really?
Everywhere.
Oh.
Oh, interesting.
Fascinating. So we could have 2 years where the Academy is just like, let's dump it all in one. Let's just give it to this guy.
Well, I mean, I was going to say the same thing except adapted screenplay. So I was predicting 7.
What do you think is going to win adapted then?
Barbie.
Oh. Well, right. Because
they love Greta. They love Noah. You know what I mean?
That's true.
Not that they don't love Noel and they've like awarded him and nominated him before, but.
Okay, but let me pose this to you then. If this doesn't win adapted screenplay, I think that's a big mistake because how do you have a 3-hour half black and white, mostly set in a 2 rooms movie without a stellar screenplay? You know what I mean?
I mean,
yeah.
Yes and no. Like you also have 3 hours to tell a story, so you have more time to tell a story.
Fair.
Whereas some of these films that are shorter and more concise that can also tell a story, that could also be rewarded in that
okay.
sense. You
yeah.
know what I mean? Like, I think if Past Lives wins original, they're not going to be like, you guys, only 1.5 hours. Your script was kind of short, so I don't know if we're going to do this, you know? But I see your point. Like, it's you also run the challenge of, like, overwriting, you know, when
yeah.
you have that much time. And I do think this is a well-written screenplay. But I just, to me, this is, I think, I don't know if Barbie is more deserving, but this does feel like a thing where it's like, you're not getting picture, you're not getting director, you're not getting all this,
yeah.
like, let's give them screenplay because it does deserve some recognition here. Let's
yeah.
give Oppenheimer the other 7.
Yeah. I think from a personal standpoint, I want it to win adapted screenplay because it does feel kind of like Christopher Nolan's magnum opus in that aspect where it's like, he finally figured it out. Sure, Florence Pugh and Emily Blunt are still slightly criminally underwritten, and he still has the Christopher Nolan wife problem. But compared to movies like Interstellar, where he takes the entire back 30 minutes or 20 minutes to basically say, like, hey, here's what I've been trying to tell you this whole movie, he just lets Oppenheimer sit. And I think that's part of what makes Oppenheimer work. I think it is a very, very smart screenplay in that aspect. I think it does win those 8 things. I think production design and costume design, makeup and hairstyling, I think those go to some other ones. And Ben, to your point, like, I think that's where the Academy says, like, Poor Things, we want to recognize you for 1. Barbie, we want to hit you up with 1. Maestro, we want to hit you up with 1 so we don't have to give you actor or director or picture. Those types of things. That clears the way for Oppenheimer to take home 8 Oscars. I feel good about that. I feel like 8 is right. And if on Oscars night, Oppenheimer walks away with 8 Oscars, I'd be pretty elated, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be pretty happy.
I'm kind of afraid to be with you if this happens. So,
I'm afraid for you. That's the thing.
Like, either it's going to go horribly right or horribly wrong. We'll suffer the consequences either way. I do
yeah.
want to say I appreciate your restraint of me mentioning the Ruffalo scene in Spotlight and you not quoting it. Like, that was big of you to not, like,
they knew
out there.
They knew the whole time and they let it happen.
Let's say it makes
it was this close.
Your lack of restraint of not mentioning Maestro every 5 minutes on the spot.
See, but that's
yeah.
the thing. I didn't do that because I'm reining it in. I'm reining it in.
Just more and more. I love it.
I hit all of my movies. I did it. Awesome. Okay. That's the Oscars. Those are our predictions, our thoughts, what we think is going to happen with Oppenheimer, of course. I hope that's what happens. We'll see how it all shakes out on Oscars night. Let's talk about the movie a little bit. Let's go through True Cinema. Of course, Oppenheimer is a 3-hour movie. It's very dense. There's a lot to pick up on. Even on my 7th rewatch, I was sitting next to a woman who, it was her first time. I had went to go see this in 70 millimeter at my local theater. I hadn't seen it on a straight 70 millimeter reel yet. And I turned to her after the movie And she was like, wow, that was stunning. And I was like, I love it. Love to hear it. That's so awesome. And she was like, what did you think? And I was like, "What?" Like that viewing spoke differently to me than all of my previous viewings. Like I was so honed in on one aspect of what Nolan was talking about or thematically trying to grasp that I had not seen yet before. So I think that's really interesting to me. And of course, there's lots of moments that we're going to skip over here because this is not a 3.5 hour pod, at least not yet. we'll see if I can rein it in. Let's start with Can You Hear the Music? Really, about 12, 14 minutes into the movie. The movie scene of the year? Is it? Maybe. It's pretty close to me.
Oh, Sub, go ahead. I thought.
It's okay.
I was going to let you guys talk about this as much as you want, because like, I understand I'm well in third place here on loving
I'm giving
this movie.
You opportunity, Ben. I'm luring you to our side.
I appreciate
here,
it.
And we'll you see. Can join us.
Yeah, we'll figure it out at the end how well this is done.
Yeah, this sequence is incredible. It's like, I mean, the actual score, this song is like, was my most played song of the year. Like, I think it was like in my top five. It really just sets the tone for like the sensory experience that this movie is. Like, just the music mixed with the visuals. Like, Nolan did not have to do those like sweeping landscape shots. Like, that was, to some people that would feel so random, but it just works so well. It's such a good sequence. I think it is one of the scenes of the year. Definitely like the song of the year. I wish it could be like, I wish there was like one original score song. Cause this is on repeat in my head at all times. But yeah, it's such a cool montage. I think I just like the sensory part of it is so interesting. And I think I saw somewhere that someone compared it to like the Disney World ride, Soarin'. Have you guys been on that ride?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Cause you just feel like, especially seeing it in IMAX, like you just feel so like in those clouds and it's beautiful.
I mean, I'm not gonna say anything better than that. It's fantastic. It's a great scene.
That's
all I got. That's all I got for you.
I respect it. You know, you put your two cents in, and that's what matters.
There's part of me, and I mean this in the best way possible, but like, there is part of me that wants to watch the movie you guys are seeing, if that makes sense. Like, for the people who put it as their number one movie of the year, because again, like, this is a really good movie and it's like technically sound and it's fantastic, and this is a wonderful scene. There really is this, there is no like but to this. Like, I really wish I had the experience of these people who are like, this is my number one movie of the year. It's like, I feel like I see why it should be, but for some reason it just like, it doesn't quite get there for me. But this scene is like no exception. This is fantastic.
Yeah, life on the outside is tough, Ben.
It's hard out here.
It's a pleasure and pressure to be the Oppenheimers that we are, seeing the world beyond the world
indeed,
that others cannot see.
I
think this scene in particular, like you said, Sophie, is so like soaring and literally and figuratively. I think I've used this scene more times when trying to like convince a member of my family or my partner Molly or like whoever to be like, hey, you should like watch Oppenheimer or like watch part of Oppenheimer, because people were like, why have you seen this so many times? Why have you dedicated like 24 hours of your life to this movie almost? I'm like, it is so like cathartic. It's so, so, so wonderful. And then always their retort is like, oh yeah, cause he built a bomb. That's really uplifting. And it's like, that's the juxtaposition. Like, that is what Christopher Nolan has brought us, is like this idealistic, idea that we get to see in the beginning. And I think this scene in particular, especially the moments that we're seeing what he sees of the atomic world and how that's occupying his brain, and how at the very end of that he unlocks what it is and he's able to sleep, I think is really fascinating and just that entire montage is like, whatever, 3 minutes or 3.5 minutes. That is the entire prelude that you need to understand how Oppenheimer's brain works. And there's no words. There's no action sequences. There's nothing. It's just showing us what we need to know. I think it's beautiful. The song is truly fantastic. And my proudest moment of being a father so far is when I get into the car with my daughters and Olive will just straight up ask me, she'll be like, can we listen to Can You Hear the Music? And I was like, we fucking won. We fucking did it.
That's amazing.
It's insane. It's so cool. And, you know.
That's going to be your father-daughter dance. You know, Can You Hear the Music? Yeah. So please, can we?
That's my DJ request. Okay, next scene I have written down here is the left wing attachments and meeting Gene. This is kind of where Oppie starts going to these meetings. Probably the funniest moment in the movie to me is where Chevalier talks about Oppenheimer's brother's girlfriend and is like, hi, still, whatever your name is. Mm-hmm. I laugh every time and nobody else fucking laughs. And I don't get it because it's so hilarious. I think it's hilarious. I love the scene. Obviously integral to understanding what our kind of cap is on the movie and where Kitty comes in and saves these ideas of who Oppenheimer really is. And I think it's a really interesting scene, and it just fascinating Christopher Nolan choice to put I Am Become Destroyer of Worlds in the scene that he chooses here. You know, I'm pro. Like get more of that on screen. But, you know, a lot of balls on Christopher Nolan to drop that in that sequence. Just got to say.
There's some really interesting and, like, I think successfully used nudity and sex scenes in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's very, like, kind of artfully done and tastefully done, which is really kind of cool to see. I do love this whole section. I do think that scene is super funny. It's like, oh, still this, you know, like whatever her name is. Obviously, we don't even remember what it is. But the thing I liked about this segment here is that I think we learn a lot about him in the sense that, like, he's willing to, like, attend parties and help people, but he's not willing to commit to any of these groups. You know, he's like, he's never like, no, I'm not, like, in the party or anything like that. Like, I'll be here. I'll help out. I maybe sympathize or agree with what you guys are doing. But, like, he's not someone that's going to, like, commit to something like that, which is kind of an interesting character trait to learn about him.
Yeah, totally. I think this scene is so, or this set of scenes is so important in understanding who Oppie is. And as someone who, like, honestly wasn't, like, super aware of him as a person, it's just so important. It's such important setup because, like, Kitty says later in the movie how, like, he took intellectual interest in things. And so him just, like, attending meetings is so important. And then also, like, understanding his relationship to his brother. And just, like, politics in general just sets up, like, the theme of political consequence so well.
And that's really the theme that I picked up on my most recent rewatch was just this, like, vast political gears that are just consistently turning, whether you commit or not to those ideas or you see yourself on the outside or not. I think this set of sequences also really lends itself to understanding that Oppie holds really strong ideals to the power of theory versus the power of physicality and how those two things differentiate in his brain and how, you know, it doesn't work on theory alone. Nothing will change on theory alone. Obviously a very crucial theme throughout the entire film. And it does it in a really cool way. I can't believe that Oppenheimer can, I don't know if this is from the book or not, I assume that he can read Sanskrit, which is just, like, kind of the ultimate flex. So he reads Sanskrit and then also, like, learns how to give a lecture in German in 6 weeks. Because, like you said, Sophie, like, he takes an intellectual interest in things. Like, he just can't not excel at certain things and, like, just can't refrain himself. And these, like, leftist ideals that he finds himself kind of surrounded by. Next on the list here, I have meeting Kitty. Another really funny moment where she's like, yeah, we're not really married. Like, not that much. And it's just like, oh, my guy's got My guy's got the riz. Cause like he goes one scene, he's getting railed by Florence Pugh, and the next scene he's out in the desert riding horses, making out with a woman who's married. And it's like, this guy takes an interest in all things. Congratulations, you did it.
I did think it told that side of his life pretty well. Like, it was really interesting to just like kind of the womanizing side of him. Meeting Kitty was great. She does have some of the best lines, I think, in this movie, especially like the one where she's like, oh yeah, and you know, what was she? I forget what she was. She's like, I upgraded to being a housewife or whatever, you know. And yeah, I don't know. Like, Emily Blunt does a wonderful job here. She's got some really good scenes in this movie, but I think just seeing how she plays off Oppie works really well.
Yeah, they have such great chemistry, and I think like even seeing the two of them like doing press and like Q&As and stuff together, like it's so obvious that they just like loved this experience together. And like, I mean, I could talk forever about how like humble Killian is and how like just obvious it is that he just doesn't understand like the power that he holds in this movie. But yeah, I think meeting Kitty is a scene that like on first watch I was so confused, because I just like you said, like we go from like Gene to Kitty, and I was like, what is going on? Like, this guy is like a man whore. but like the more I watch it, I'm like, okay, wow, like this is done so well. Like just like the setup between those two relationships, and the way that like Oppie then goes to Gene and says like, I didn't want you to hear this from someone else. Like, it's so interesting seeing like Oppie's relationship to like sex and women and relationships. But yeah, I think going back to Emily Blunt, like, and her like Oscar chances and stuff, like I would love for her to win an Oscar, but I just like Ben, you said earlier, like this just, she just isn't given enough. And as much as I want it for her, like I almost like don't want this to be like her Oscar, because she's great, but it's just not like, it's not her best.
Yeah. I mean, she's got the Oscar clip. Like, we'll just say that. I mean,
for sure.
She's got the clip. So, and we know the Academy loves that clip. They love that moment that they can pin. I think this, like you said, Sophie, is a really interesting insight into like how Oppenheimer kind of feels this selfless responsibility to certain things in his life to see them through. Obviously, the major one being his ability to see this world and to create what is yet to be created. But also that comes at the expense of like Gene and Kitty, and like going back to Gene and being like, hey, we are being responsible about this. She's getting divorced before she starts the show so we can be married, and all of these things. And like the constantly calling Gene as well when she doesn't want to be called, he feels like he can't abandon these certain things in his life, these certain realms that he finds himself attached to, whether that's science or not. So I think it is really interesting. Next on the list, Groves' introduction. Leslie Groves, played by Matt Damon. Really an all-timer intro for a character kind of like in a movie ever. And I think the energy that their characters give off to each other right off the bat is these two men who see themselves for the importance that they hold within their worlds, battling for the other person to understand that importance and trying to figure out who is going to come out on top in this relationship that we really get to see play out over like 2.5 hours, and figuring out how they stand with one another. And I know it's so corny, and it's exactly what Christopher Nolan wanted, but like when Oppie is like, Alfred Nobel won the Nobel Prize for inventing dynamite, every single time I'm just like, yes, he did. Oppie, you're the guy. Like, you're inventing a bomb, dude. You're doing it. It's every fucking time. It just gets me, and I'm just like, that is good stuff. I love this scene.
Yeah, this scene is so underrated. Like, it's honestly the scene I look forward to most. I think just because, like, the first time I watched this movie, and I watched this scene, I was like, yes, this is Nolan's best screenplay. Like, the dialogue is just so smart. It's so quippy. I love their back and forth so much. Like, the banter was just, like, giving Sorkin in this moment. It reminded me so much of The Social Network and just, like, yeah, how smart, like, that comeback was about Nobel. Like, it just, I love the scene so much. I think Matt Damon is... would be my choice for best supporting actor. I think he's amazing in this. He's just so fun and brings such humor to this film. Like, I think he's who I find the funniest. Yeah, so good. All-time scene for me.
Can I add his line to, like, my kind of echelon of lines that I spat on the spot?
Yeah, let's hear it. Let's do it.
Do it.
Oh, now that I'm on the spot, I don't know if I can.
Come on.
How does it go? Because this is the most important fucking thing. I can't remember it. In the history of the world.
Yep. That was it.
That's his Oscars clip. Let's be honest. That's what it. They should play. I feel
you
good about
that. You need to watch it for an eighth time just to get it dialed in. Yeah. That was pretty close.
I'm slacking
right now.
That was
pretty close. Yeah. I mean, Sophie, you just talked about the chemistry between, like, Kitty and Oppie. I think their chemistry is equally just as interesting. Like, the two of them just going different tab back and forth with each other, neither of them really giving up any ground, so to speak. And I'm with you. I think if I had to give a supporting, it'd be Damon. Like, he's my favorite part of this whole movie, to be honest. Like, maybe Benny Safdie sneaks in there a little bit, you know, really close, because he's just given some funny stuff to say and do. But Matt Damon is great in this.
Also, justice for Dane DeHaan, who's just been, like, relegated to TV for, like, the last 3 years, and hasn't really made anything noteworthy since, like, The Amazing Spider-Man 2. I don't know, 1? I can't remember.
It was 2. It was 2.
I think he's great in this movie as well. All-time moment for this character introduction. Next here on the list, I have Assembling Los Alamos. Of course, this is probably the most interesting in terms of what Nolan decides to script and not script, and the direction that he goes, that has kind of been a big-ish talking point of the film, of, you know, not seeing the fallout of the bomb and not seeing what happens afterwards and not seeing what takes place. And these choices, of course, Los Alamos has a very staunch history of, like, the government basically taking it over and kicking out certain groups of people and using it for their own benefit. I don't know enough to, like, speak on that, but I think the movie does an interesting job of, like, touching that. So it does add to this, like, moral qualm of, like, Oppenheimer just saw that as, like, no issue. He was just like, we'll just commandeer this area. We'll kick out a couple of tribes. It's ours. As far as you can see. And I think that's a really fascinating point of context for, like, the back hour of the film. Great moment in here also is when Robbie basically tells him, like, tell Groves to shit in his hat. We need you to be a scientist and not an admiral. Is great stuff. And again, just, like, feeds this continual energetic force of, like, Oppie's responsibility to take on everything that he can and that he sees and that he feels like he can manage, even when it's too much. I love them building Los Alamos. I think it's a really fun part of the movie.
Yeah, it's a fun get the gang together, you know, yeah. Ocean's 11, like, let's get everybody together kind of thing here. And there are some great scenes in here too. I love when the, like, female scientist shows up and it's like, where am I supposed to go? Like, they asked me if I could type. It's like, well, can you type? Like, well, they didn't, like, I didn't take a class on that in my, like, doctorate degree, you know what I mean? Like, I enjoyed seeing those moments on there of what people were expecting back then. But him also talking Groves through it all, it's like, yeah, we're giving everyone jobs here. That way, like, there's less people, less, you know, they have to bring you in. So really cool to see it all assemble. But I also appreciate that later in the movie, it's like, well, what do we do with this area? It's like, well, we give it back. Like, we took it over, but now we give it back to them. So I think it also kind of shows his humanity there. Not that we don't see it other places, but definitely shows it there. It's like, yeah, we give it back to them.
Yeah, the scene, I think, in my initial viewing felt like the most Nolan scene to me, because it's like, the assembling of the gang, like you said, like it feels like a superhero movie where he like puts on his hat and his pipe. Like it just feels so,
yeah,
so Nolan. Like it, and it feels yeah. that aspect of it just made it feel like The Dark Knight. Like it was yeah. so cool.
This I is love, that was. Oh, I'm sorry, that was just another one though. He's like, the second thing you have to do is this. Like, what's the first thing? He's like, get out of that fucking uniform. Like, you're not in the army. Like, put on regular clothes. I like that.
This
Grumholtz, baby.
This is also kind of included and kind of like in talked about what we just did with Groves' introduction as well. When we get this like montage of Groves going to different people, Groves and Oppie kind of going to different people and trying to recruit them and figure out if they're going to come or what. And I just want to give a really quick shout out to another really minute, nuanced like line that I always think is really funny when Oppie and Groves are on the train and Oppie's like, what can I tell them? How do we get them on board? And Groves says, like, you can tell them anything until you feel my foot on your balls. And the very next scene, he's in a room with two people trying to explain what he's recruiting them for. And he looks to Groves. And Groves looks back at him, and Oppie crosses his legs so as to, like, physically brace himself for, like, the foot on the balls kind of a thing. Oppie is always pushing that boundary, and I love that authoritative dynamic that so many people have against Groves, especially Josh Hartnett's character, comes in and is like, I said I agree, or I said I heard you. I didn't say I agree with like what I can and cannot tell people. So like little moments like that, I think are really cement worthy for like it's Killian's Oscar to lose. Like that he understood the assignment. Next, I have the table with kind of Strauss and company. He moves the the big flower vase in the middle to hear Dane DeHaan basically. Shit on Oppie and be like, I'm pretty sure there was a spy in Los Alamos. And this is where we get like the first reoccurrence of that really cool VFX that Nolan does with the water droplets on the table. We get that in the very beginning. We get it at the very end as well. This kind of reminder that these decisions echo. They echo beyond this table. They echo beyond this country, this political system, all of these things. And this, I think you could use this as RDJ's like, not nominating moment, if you want to go that way. I know we have kind of the big finale with him, but this moment in particular is really where the worlds start to collide, in my opinions.
Yeah, I agree. I think one thing I really enjoy about this sequence that we see multiple times throughout the movie is kind of a callback to a scene, but from a different angle. And we get that here with this table as well. Like the stuff that we didn't see here from a different perspective, but just seeing, you know, it's always nice to see a bunch of white guys sitting around a table. It's always a pleasure. So
it's my favorite kind of movie, man.
This is the white guys at the table movie for sure. So, yeah, no, Strauss, like you said, RDJ really kind of owns this stuff.
Yeah. I think I said, in one of my reviews, like there is literally a recognizable white man acting around every corner in this movie. And I think when they're sitting around the table together, you can just like feel how like they're all just acting at like their peak. And it's like they just bounce off of each other so well. So yeah, I love the table sequences. And I think this is where RDJ like shines the best for me, honestly.
Yeah. It's where it feels like he has the most power over the main narrative and the main storyline of what's taking place. You mentioned people like working at their peak. I just quick shout out for Jason Clarke as Roger Robb, just fucking sending it with every ounce of his acting ability. I don't think we'll necessarily touch that scene in particular, but I think that obviously is like one of the most intense scenes of the movie. Probably the most intense scene of the movie is the Trinity test, probably the movie scene of the year. I think it pretty much definitively is. Sublime score, truly elevating stuff from Nolan and every ounce of the filmmaking team, the editing and everything that goes into this scene in this movie, all culminating in what I think is a very wise decision to delay the sound of the bomb until 30 seconds later when other people would have heard it. And what I think is probably Oppenheimer's most impactful single sentence, "These things are heavy on the heart," that he says just before he changes the world.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty wild. Trinity Test, kind of unbeatable in terms of like movie scenes, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, you guys have more experience with it than I do, but both times seeing it, I just like get so caught up in hearing everyone's breathing and all that kind of stuff, like just immediately after. And then there's a point where it's just like, oh, wait, the sound's coming. You know, it's like, oh, shit. Okay. And just like bracing yourself for that. Is it the scene of the year? I mean, it might be. It's almost unfair to have this up against anything else, you know, as far as our true cinema moments. It's like, this was kind of the true cinema moment of the year for yeah. movies, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you guys said everything I would want to say. I think that this scene is just truly breathtaking, and kind of going back to the sensory experience that I was referring to earlier, like it just feels like you're there with them. And yeah, the taking away of the soundtrack like is so powerful. And just like, it almost just like gives you time to like really think about like the implications of this. And yeah, I mean, I don't know, even know what to say. I think it's the scene of the year.
It's really an impactful moment when you get to spend the moments after we hear the audible bomb go off with Oppie and that one guy that like bets a month's salary on if it's going to go off or not, which incredible, like total juxtaposition of like where people are on the impact of this bomb going off. And those moments in particular, when Oppie is really kind of doing like the coach after they just won the championship, they go to the hallway and they kind of like catch themselves before they go back out to the public. That Oppie's doing that, but in public. He's got to do it with everybody hyping him up and carrying him and surrounding him. The facial expressions that Killian's able to give off in this particular scene is truly remarkable stuff. I just can't. The gears are just turning so fucking fast, and you're watching it happen in real time. It's crazy. Just a couple more. Auditorium rumble. Probably the scariest scene in the movie. The one that we see the most maybe physical impact of the bomb. And another scene in which I think it identifies it needs to win best sound, because it's truly like horrifying and frightening for me, like on levels with the zone of interest of like, wow, I can't imagine living that moment and like that actual impact on the world and what that meant. And I think it's the first time we get to see Oppie kind of descend down the other side of the hill in terms of like who he needs to be and who he's turning into, because the things that he says initially are very, very out of character. And they're very not what Oppenheimer believes or stands for. But he feels that pressure for what he's done. And this scene, much like the Trinity Test, is just pretty much kind of just like leaves me speechless. And I think everything after the Trinity Test, you're just like fucking full glue to the screen of like, how is this going to shake out? Wild scene.
Watching the skin peel away and like step through that body, like this is, yeah, it's crazy that there's any scene in this movie that could stick with you after having seen the Trinity Test, but this definitely is that. We're just like, holy shit, this is a really powerful scene as well, and for all these different reasons, but yeah, this is masterful for sure.
Yeah, I think this is also where I could really see Nolan and his style, because like when the camera is on Killian and like the back is like moving, it reminded me a lot of Interstellar and that like library scene. I think like the corpse and the skin is all very scary, but honestly, the very like small moment that scares me the most in the scene is when the camera shows like this white blonde woman like clapping and just like crying, like tears of joy. It's just so disturbing. Like thinking about like how, I mean, not to get like too political, but how like these white people in America are like cheering and just like are so happy about like innocent people dying. Like it's just, it's so frightening.
When's your World War II politics pod dropping?
Astounding
insight. I need to be the first guest. I'll just riff with you for 2 hours about World War II politics. I mean, I think to your point, Sophie, like the people, we see a woman doing that. We see a couple making out and feeling each other up and drinking. And then we see a person outside vomiting. And I think we see the complete span of how people are interpreting what this means for America, what this means for the world, all quite ambivalent to how Oppenheimer himself must feel, of course. Friends coming to testify, this kind of takes place over a long period of time. This is really like the final hour of the film. I want to use this moment to ask you guys, because I'm in the camp where I think the last hour of the film is the best. I think it's the most exciting. I think it's the most dense and impactful and powerful. Do you guys think the last hour is the best, or are you guys like team front two? Everything up until the Trinity test, or everything post Trinity test?
Probably post, just has a bigger impact on the overall story, but it getting us there is also so well done. It's kind of a 1A, 1B thing. I don't think either of them are bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know if I've like thought about it too much, just because I like there's so many impactful scenes like throughout. I really, this is like picking like a favorite child. Like I really don't know.
It's like picking your favorite Ninja Turtle. It's like, I don't know. I have no idea which one to pick. I'm so familiar with all of them.
Do not ask me to name the Ninja Turtles right now, because I couldn't.
You can't? Are you serious? You can't name all? There's only four, Sophie.
I know Michelangelo.
There you go.
That's one. That's, I thought you were like a politics buff. I thought you were like a history person. What are we doing?
I mean,
here?
I know that they're all like historical names. I just don't know which ones they are.
I love it.
Ben, you know all four, right?
Yeah, Leo, Donatello, Michelangelo, Raphael.
Whew, okay,
come on. Master Shredder, Splinter, Bebop, and Rocksteady. Like, let's go.
Or TMNT head.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, are we going to be covering TMNT, Mutant Mayhem? Is that,
I hope it
best
gets nominated for Best Picture. Hell yeah. In a just world.
I think what is most impactful to me in this long series of things is when Lawrence comes to testify and Robbie looks at him and Lawrence turns away. And that is really like the dagger in the unspilling of all of these things happening, of all of these people around Oppenheimer choosing to be on his side or not choosing to be on his side, and how that, what that means to all of their individual lives. I know we skipped over some really important kind of things like that, like the Chevalier incident, I think is really interesting. And another scene where every single time Emily Blunt comes in and is like, the brat is down, where are the drinks? And I'm just like, that's funny. That's because I would do the same thing. That's funny. Okay, two more things I want to put on here. The court reveal that we get from Rami Malek's character, how Strauss kind of organized all this and put all this together. And then we get the very ending where Alden Ehrenreich is just, God bless his soul. I think he's a fantastic actor. I think he's excellent in this film. And is like, maybe people were talking about something more important. That's not you. And then Oppie's like, hey, Einstein, I'm pretty sure we set off a chain reaction. I think we're all fucked. And, you know, that's obviously surmising 45 minutes of very masterful filmmaking. But I do think that's what works about Oppenheimer, is that you get to the end and you realize, oh, yeah, we fucked ourselves. Like, cool. We have to sit with that now. And we have to live with that. And Oppenheimer doesn't try to justify it, doesn't try to make you feel good. Who would want to justify their whole lives? That's the whole point of the movie. And I love that Nolan understands that and knows how to play off of that. And not overbear on that. I think all of these are really, really interesting. Is there any particular moments to call out, like in this back 45 minutes?
I mean, the Alden Ehrenreich does such a good job in this movie, and I think he really shines at the end here. Like, I love seeing him. I don't know. I like Solo. Okay. What can I say? I think it's a good movie, and I was just glad to see him, in this. He does a great job up against RDJ. That court reveal, Rami Malek got his own little Ruffalo spotlight moment. You know, it's like, all right, cool. This is why he's here. Okay. I got it. You know? It's all just worked so well, but once again, that final scene where we just get to see it from a different angle and it all just like explains so many things. It's like, oh, okay, that's what it was all about. So yeah, it wraps up perfectly. I don't know why he doesn't like this movie. Like, it's a good movie.
I was like, from the way you're talking, it sounds like you've upgraded this movie since we started.
I love the Rami Malek moment so much. I think it's so funny that he just like stumbles around with the clipboard and
fucking
like
dunce,
you're
idiot.
So confused why he's there. Like, I should have known that like something like that was gonna happen, but it's like you're just so caught up in this huge ensemble cast that you're like, oh, he just like wanted to be in a Nolan movie, so he's like in the background. He comes in and he's like, mic drop moment, and it's amazing. Love his performance in this. That final scene is just like as perfect as it gets. I don't know.
Yeah. I think episode number 2 of your World War II politics should be about the JFK name drop in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Senator amazing. From Massachusetts, yeah.
Yeah. F. Kennedy. Really good stuff. Of course, really. And this is where I start to debate myself, because I think Robert Downey Jr. is phenomenal in this final 30 minutes of the film. And, you know, if he could do it again, he would do it all over. All of these moments that it does, to me, it feels like capital A acting, but it warrants it. It deems it necessary, because that's the impact that this has had on this character. And of course, throughout the movie, we get these little bits and pieces, like you mentioned, Ben, of like going from the fusion side of things to the fission side of things, the subjective to the objective, and understanding how Strauss put this all together and what it does all mean. Last shout out real fast. I just want to give a quick note to Casey Affleck showing up as Boris Pasch. Just fucking unadulterated security guy. That's just like, just going to torture people. And we're just going to put Oppie through the ringer right here in this office and record him. Is insane. And I think I know when this movie was being released and when the cast list was coming out, people were like, oh, another white guy on the cast, another white guy. It's like, we kind of nailed it. Like, we kind of got the right people. So feels like that. Of course, I'm going with the Trinity test for my true cinema moment, but I mean, the whole movie, it's kind of my true cinema moment. Anybody picking anything other than the Trinity test as like your tried and true moment?
I just want to pick a little bit of the Trinity test, which stuck out to me the most, and I really enjoyed it, is when they're all prepping for the Trinity test and Safdie's, putting his shit all over his face.
Is it rubbed?
And they go to Jack Quaid and like, hey, do you want this? He's like, oh no, the glass, it stops the UV. And Benny Safdie's like, what stops the glass? I really just loved that line. Like, I thought it was so good. Like, yeah, dude, like, what the fuck? Like, I would not be like, yeah, I'll just sit in my car behind the windshield. This is no big deal. I thought that line, especially the delivery, was just so good. But obviously the Trinity test for sure.
I think Jack Quaid is so perfect in that moment too, because he's got like the right energy and the right like body and face to just be like, oh, you would believe that, wouldn't you? You would be the guy who's like, nah, the glass is good. Bongo boy. great stuff all the way around. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure, Sophie, you're similar. Ben, might not be as much, but we could probably talk about this for another hour and really deep dive on the movie. But we're going to wrap this.
We'll be halfway through the movie. That runtime.
I was hoping we'd make a 3-hour pot. Then we could just like sink it. And yeah. I mean, we got to do an Oppie watch along sometime. That's what I'm saying here. Last week for Barbie, we covered the best actress race, talked about Margot's chances and how we see things, how they might shake out. This week, we're going to talk about the best actor race and see what our predictions are, what our ideas are, what our thoughts are. Because Oppenheimer, of course, feels like the front runner for Cillian Murphy, kind of taking this. So as of today, January 3rd, 2024. These are Variety's predictions for Best Actor. We've got Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer, Bradley Cooper for Maestro, Paul Giamatti for The Holdovers, Jeffrey Wright for American Fiction, and Colman Domingo for Rustin. I did not know which one they have winning, but I think it's either Jeffrey Wright or Colman Domingo, because I remember reading it and I was quite shocked. They have Leonardo DiCaprio at 6 for Killers of the Flower Moon, and Andrew Scott for All of Us Strangers at number 7 on the bubble. Now, when we talked to Clayton, we kind of went into depth about this topic and about Andrew Scott and how he's quite a firm 7, but we could see that bump up and things could shake out differently. Sophie, who are your 5 nominees, and who do you think is going to win the Best Actor Academy Award?
Well, I think I would honestly switch Colman Domingo with Andrew Scott right now.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I watched Rustin, and I don't think... Like, I think Colman Domingo is obviously the best part of that film, but I don't know. I feel like it's just not his best performance. And I don't really hear that many people talking about it. Maybe I'm just not in the right circles, but
You're so online, Sophie. You're Kendall Roy all over this shit, man. You're so online. Give me a break.
I haven't seen American Fiction, so I can't speak to that performance, really. But I think Cillian is taking it, and I think Bradley Cooper is his toughest competition right now.
Yeah, baby. Love that maestro race. I just want him to get up there. If Cooper wins, I just want him to get up there and just say, you know, looks like someone dropped Snoopy in the vestibule, and just get off the stage. And just, like, that's his acceptance speech. That's all we need.
He's getting, like, booted off that stage. They're going to be playing music for him because he's going to be up there talking for like 10 minutes. There's no way he's keeping it that concise.
9 nominations later and you fucking gave it to me.
Yeah, you fucking idiots, finally. I mean, I haven't seen American Fiction or Rustin, but what I'm going to put out into the world is what I want to see in the world. Mm-hmm. And that is Zac Efron nominated for Best Actor. So I'm going to put him there instead of Colman Domingo.
Respect. Yeah, I think that would be fun to see Zac Efron nominated.
I don't like actually think it's going to happen, but I would love to see it.
That would be very cool. Yeah, like you, I don't think that's going to happen. Who do you think is going to win, Ben?
Cillian.
Okay. I also think Cillian is going to win as of this moment in time. Much like you, Sophie, I think Bradley Cooper is his strongest competition, and I think it's just a matter of which way the Academy wants to go. And if they want to recognize Cooper for acting instead of directing or instead of a screenplay or makeup or something like that for his film. I think they're two vastly different campaigning styles. So I'm really, really keyed in on how like the next 8 weeks go and how these people campaign and what that means for voters. I think it's going to be Cillian with the win, Cooper, Paul Giamatti. You know what? Actually, no. Cillian Murphy with the win, Leonardo DiCaprio nominated, Bradley Cooper nominated, Jeffrey Wright, and Andrew Scott nominated. That's the 5 that I think it's going to be. I think Leo is going to get the nomination. I don't think he's going to win. I think Lily Gladstone is going to be like the key for Killers of the Flower Moon. I think that's where it's going to pick up the win. But that would be a good 5, in my opinion. Okay, let's quickly make a collaborative Best Picture ranking. Off the cuff. Just gonna give it our shot here and see what we come up with. Last week we said Poor Things, May December, Oppenheimer, Barbie, The Boy and the Heron, Killers of the Flower Moon, The Zone of Interest, Past Lives, Anatomy of a Fall, and The Iron Claw. Those are the 10 that we had wanted to be Best Picture nominations. Sophie, I'm gonna let you lead this before we close out. What do you think the 10 Best Picture nominations are gonna be?
Am I naming all 10?
Yeah, go for it. As of now, which is like, we're like 10 weeks away from the Academy.
Yeah.
We're like 11.
Okay. And I'm ranking them.
Sure. You can rank them. You can do whatever you want.
I assume
I put Oppenheimer in the notes just now. I assume Oppenheimer's number one with the win.
Oppenheimer number one with the win.
That should be the game. I should try to guess your
Yeah, that's fun. I'm going to say Poor Things.
Okay.
Number two, Killers of the Flower Moon.
Mm-hmm.
Barbie.
Okay. Sorry. We hope so, because that was the first episode we recorded. If that doesn't get bumped.
Yeah, these are our first four episodes. So
oh, amazing. Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah. Okay, number five, Past Lives.
Thank you.
Okay. See, this is where things get a little interesting, in my opinion.
Yeah. Maestro.
Oh, wow. Excellent.
May, December.
Okay.
The Holdovers.
Ah, interesting. We did not have The Holdovers on our list last week.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. A movie that I think, I don't know, kind of on the bubble there.
Hmm. and I'm going to go Anatomy of a Fall because we need...
Got to get some international flavor in
yeah.
there.
Yeah. And then I'm going to go The Iron Claw.
Okay. Wow. Nice. Love it. Love to see it. I like that 10 list. I think that's good. I think it's probably pretty close to what we might end up getting. To be honest, I think your bubbles are probably the color purple in the zone of interest, the ones that we left off. We didn't have the color purple on there either last week. But yeah, I think it's interesting. Ben, do you have any qualms? Do you have any moral qualms about Sophie's top 10 here?
No, she has Past Lives above Maestro, so I'm happy. That's all I was worried about. That's all I need.
I just spend 80 minutes with you guys catching fucking strays for Maestro. It's like you like one movie and you get obliterated for it.
We're not reining it in, okay? We're not reining it in.
Any closing thoughts from anybody on Oppenheimer? I'm impressed. I mean, under 90 minute pod here. Sophie, I know it's very late where you're recording, but you know, you put in the work for Oppenheimer and I'm proud of you. I respect that.
Thanks, guys. Look, I literally had these materials next to me.
Wow.
Just for the vibes, you know? Like,
yeah.
I need them close to me. I need to feel their energy.
Yeah. Got to surround yourself. How is that the making of book, by the way? Because I'm on the fence.
Right.
It's like $50, you know?
It's worth it. I mean, I got it as a gift, but it's great.
Okay.
I like it.
Any closing thoughts, Ben?
Like I said, it improved on a rewatch for me. I'm curious what it will do on a third rewatch. Maybe we'll get it to 4.5 stars. Who knows? We can only hope.
That's what I'm saying. We got to go watch along. We got to get you. This is just our first step in a long incremental plan. By Best Picture Day, you're gonna be rooting for Oppie.
I'll do this before I do Beau's Afraid again. So yes,
okay,
that's fine.
That's good. Yeah. That's good. That's fair. Yeah, I think Oppie is fantastic. I'm glad we did an episode about it. I'm glad that it'll be nominated for Best Picture and that we got the opportunity to talk about it. And quite frankly, I'm just glad it exists. Like, I'm glad it's part of our movie world. Sophie, thanks so much for coming on the show. Just a delight to have you. If people want to find more of you, where can they find you at?
I am on TikTok at the Sophie Network. I'm on Letterboxd and Twitter. Just search Sophie Holsinger and you can find me.
Nice.
Awesome. You are also most of the time on the Movie Draft Podcast.
Yes, I am.
So yeah, go tune into that. First episode drops in a few days, which is really exciting. Next week on the pod, another sweeping epic of a film, another 3+ hour killer. Pew, 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 if you will. Killers of the Flower Moon.
I'm sick. There's no way.
Mark Sera, also known as the Third House on TikTok, is joining us to discuss Killers of the Flower Moon. He puts out very insightful content on TikTok, very deep dives into film theory and how things are made. So I'm really excited to have him on the show, to get his opinion, to talk about one of my favorite movies of the year, what I think is going to be known as one of Scorsese's best movies ever? Question mark? I don't know. We'll see. We'll talk about it. Sophie, pro Killers of the Flower Moon?
Pro. So pro. Oh,
good. You'll love to hear it. I'm excited for next week, Ben.
Me too. We get to talk about another 3-star movie from me.
Oh my
Killers
God.
Killers of the Flower Moon. Listen,
you're just going to end the pod like that? You're fucking psychotic.
I did my top 32 like you did. Number 27 was Oppenheimer. Number 28 was Killers of the Flower Moon. Like, that's the right place for them, in my opinion.
God.
Join us next week.
I just suffered an aneurysm. Oh,
next week,
God.
As we talk about my 28th favorite movie of 2023, Killers of the Flower Moon. And yeah, let us know what you thought about my 27th favorite movie of the year, Oppenheimer. What awards do you think it's going to pick up at the Academy Awards? Is it going to win Best Picture? Let us know. We're on Twitter and Instagram at 24 minutes of A24. Don't forget to subscribe to us on YouTube, where you can see all of our beautiful faces as we talk about these movies. Thank you, everyone, for your support. I am Ben Lawhorn.
I'm Ethan Simmy. This podcast is the most, is the, what is it? The fucking most important thing in the history of the world.
Cut that together so it's perfect.
I'll splice it. It'll work. It works. It's good. You know, shout out Matt Damon for acting. You know, yeah. harder than you think.
It is hard.
Harder than it looks.